the ability to do remote viewing, lucid dreaming in Stephen's case, what is it about this wireless internet that's out there that allows people to tap into it and do these incredible things? I mean, how in the heck does it work?
Oh, the psychic internet is one of my favorite descriptions of the psychic connection, because what it shows is that who we are is not just a physical body. Who we are is actually non-local awareness. And non-locality has brought some respect to psychic functioning in that modern physics is beginning to talk about the idea that things that seem separated from one another are actually connected in surprising ways. So if I were a graduate student in physics, I would probably be investigating doing a dissertation in non-locality. But what it pertains to with regard to human beings is that our awareness is free to get information from the distance and from the future independent of our physical bodies. Now, there are a variety of ways that this manifests. The easy one is remote viewing. At Stanford, we would have people quiet their minds and describe what they see on their internal screen with regard to what's happening in Russia or with regard to where someone is hiding. And that way, no one would ever have a bad experience because they're just describing their mental pictures. But there is a continuum from remote viewing to the out-of-body experience where you can have a remote viewing experience but bring with you as much of your emotionality or sensitivity or sexuality as you're comfortable with and have a very engaging experience at a distant place where you have mobility at the distant place. You might even interact with a person at a distant location. So we have these two kinds of things. We have the very kind of sanitary perceptual experience that we call remote viewing, and at the other end of the continuum, you have an out-of-body experience where the person really feels like he's at the distant place and also comes back with verifiable information.
Russell, can I go to sleep, let's say, at 5 o'clock in the morning, Central Time, and someone else goes to sleep at the same time, and they dream, I dream, and we put each other in each other's dreams? Is that possible? Who wants that, Russell?
Well, Stephen? I know that identical twins do that for a fact. Identical twins will frequently, twin children will frequently come down to their parents in the morning and say, we want to tell you about the dream we had last night. So that kind of shared dream is very a very familiar experience. The other thing that has been well documented is one person has an out-of-body experience and goes and visits another person, often a sweetheart, and then they have a consensual reality. They agree on what happened during that experience. It's probably not so common. Well, I guess husbands and wives sleeping together will sometimes share elements of a dream.
Right.
I've done that. So that would be a kind of thing where elements are shared. But the spectacular sharing that you were describing to is quite legendary among identical twins.
Yeah, may I respond to that as
go
well
ahead,
there?
Steve.
I would, and in fact, in my first book, Lucid Dreaming, I distinguish between two different interpretations of shared dreams. One is a shared theme, and another is a shared scene. Now, for example, right now I could say, look, how about the three of us, let's imagine doing something. Let's imagine we're going to go, you know, to Hawaii and jump in the swimming pool under the full moon. Now, right? Splash, splash, splash. So, now I say, hey, Russell, I just imagined that you and George and I were jumping in a swimming pool in Hawaii. And you say, hey, well, so did I. And so did George, so did I. Does that mean that we shared the experience in the same sense as we would if we actually did that? Well, not quite. Now, that's where we get to the sharing of not scene, or rather not themes, but scenes. Because right now, we are, in a sense, sharing an interaction through one part of reality we call the physical world by And it's a kind of a shared dream where in my world I'm experiencing what's going on, and that's my own dream. And Russell's having a dream, and so is George having a dream. All of three dreams are correlated thanks to sensory input. Now, there's a way actually of discriminating, of determining which of those cases is actually happening, if either. So if I believe I can share a dream, say, with George, we can prove that it really happens, that in the same way as we share an experience in the waking state, by using the same method that we use for proving that lucid dreaming happens in reality, and that is the eye movement signal. That it turns out that if while we're in a dream, say, let's say Stephen is dreaming now, and if we have electrodes next to his eyes measuring his eye movements, and I say, all right, in my dream now, I'm going to look to the left, right, and center. Then on a polygraph or computer screen, we could see that eye movement correspond to the left, right eye movement. So let's suppose that George and I, you know, we're both having our eye movements measured at the same time we think that we're meeting in a dream, okay? So all we have to do is George and I are face-to-face, and I move my finger from left to right in front of George, say, hey, George, just follow my finger here. And so my eyes go, say, left, right, and simultaneously George's go right, left, because he's facing opposite. So if we really were in the same world together, we'd show simultaneous eye movements in opposite directions on the computer screen. And that would then be objective evidence for shared dreams in the literal sense that we really are in another world.
Do people do that?
Not yet, but the idea is it's something that is theoretically possible.